Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. We've all recovered, vaguely, I suppose, from that amazing performance at Headingley. It's a week on from that now. And, well, now is the pivotal moment, really. Having recovered England's composure, they now have the chance of actually winning the Ashes in the next two Test matches, the first of which starts on Wednesday at Old Trafford. Actually a place where they haven't got a great record against Australia. Australia quite like Old Trafford's sort of pace, and also the fact that in the past that it turned as well. Do you buy the idea that England have got momentum now? I'm not sure I do.
It's a bit of a myth, I think, the idea of momentum in sport. What it has given England, Headingley, is an opportunity. They've got a chance, whereas for most of that Headingley Test match, it looked as if the Ashes were done. So that, I think, will just nibble away at Australia. If things start to go wrong at Old Trafford, then the confidence might drain away. Steve Smith looks as if he's going to be back for Australia, played in the tour match at Derby. It's just fascinating. It's great. I think the bottom line is it's great that the Ashes are still alive and there's still that excitement with two matches to go. And it would be fantastic, actually, if the series was decided in the last game. I mean, it'd be, say, for example, if Old Trafford was a draw and we went to the Oval with England needing to win, Australia needing a draw or a win to take the Ashes.
That a bit would, like that, 2005.
Yeah, that would set it up fantastically. Yeah. Of course, Australia could just scrub that out in the next few days, couldn't they? Bat first, get runs on the board and go on and win the game and do what they didn't do at Headingley.
Mm. Well, we'll hear in a bit from a coach we've heard on this programme before, actually, Paddy Upton, who worked with Ben Stokes in the winter and also, of course, with Jofra Archer and Steve Smith, in fact, for the Rajasthan Royals.
Well, and he answers the question, is Ben Stokes a psychopath?
Yes. Well, that's one of the questions he answers. But we're going to explore whether Stokes can do this kind of thing consistently or not. But before we get to that, I suppose we should just look at England's team overall and the makeup and the changes that they've made. It sounds as if Joe Denley is going to now open the batting and that Jason Roy is going to drop to four, which seems sensible, though not guaranteed of any more success, in a way.
Poor old Joe Denley. I mean, he's,
push me, pull you.
Well, he wasn't considered strong enough to bat at three, was he? Remember that? At the start of the series? So he was pushed down to four. Joe Root pushed up to number three. We think that Joe Root wants to bat at four, although, I've heard people insist, in the England hierarchy, insist he does want to bat at three, but all the other evidence suggests that he doesn't. So Joe Denley, go down to four. And then suddenly he's opening, and so he's going to get the bombardment at the top of the order. I mean, he looks to have a pretty solid technique.
Well, you say that. I mean, I don't like the way he turns his back on the bouncer.
Well, that's the only thing.
That does worry me, actually. Yeah. I mean, you've got two batsmen there at the top of the order now with Rory Burns as well, who, is a good player, but he doesn't like it short and up. He doesn't like it up him, as they say. And few people do. But some players play it better than others. Yeah. And I think there is going to be a bit of a bombardment, especially if Old Trafford is quite a spicy, lively pitch.
Yeah. And my mind goes back to Mitchell Johnson steaming in before the 2013-14 Ashes series in a one-day international at Old Trafford, steaming in. You got a little indication of what might be to come. Remember, that was the series England won 3-0, and then they were going straight off to Australia to defend them, and they played a one-day series afterwards, and that match at Old Trafford, the ball was flying around. And did Owen Morgan get hit in a one-day international at Old Trafford
Mitchell
as well?
Stark.
That was Mitchell Stark, yeah.
He was hit by Mitchell Stark, and that was a shocker, actually, because it just flew. And Stark, I think, if I was Australia, I'd play Stark this test, because he's absolutely gagging to play. And secondly, I think he'll find some help and some encouragement from the Old Trafford pitch. So England are going to get some hurry up this test match.
Yeah, and they haven't played him so far, I think, for two reasons. One was they wanted control and they feel he leaks runs in England. And the other one is, you know, was he 100% fit, or was he fit enough to play earlier in the series? He probably said he was. But I think, you know, in the World Cup, they were managing him in the World Cup. So there may have been a slight fitness issue as well surrounding Stark. But, you know, wickets in the match at Derby, you know, he must be absolutely raring to go. And, you know, they have mixed and matched their bowlers during this Ashes series. That was part of their planning to do exactly that.
Talking of mixing and matching bowlers, so England now without Anderson, who's been ruled out for the Ashes, we can come on to what his future may be in due course. But what will England do in response to that? Chris Wokes just looks perhaps a little bit off colour. Hasn't got quite the penetration perhaps he would like. So
is he allowed to have a bad game, though? I mean, a batsman has a bad game and stays in the whole series.
Of course he is. I mean, he's a very trustworthy, you know, consistent cricketer. But they might look at... I just wonder whether they might look at Sam Curran, who will get some skiddy sort of pace off the pitch, and he's just... I know Joe Root loves his winning kind of ethos, the fact that he just has something about him that turns games.
I think he's played in 8 of England's last 10 victories. Well, that's before heading, actually. So he has got something about it. They want to get him in the side, don't they? They want to find a place for Sam Curran in the side. I'm pretty sure about that. But they don't, we've said it before, they don't quite know what sort of cricketer he is at the moment. They don't know what his best role is. They don't quite know what his best position is. Is he going to become a batsman
I saw him batting number 3, actually, for Surrey in the Vitality Blast the other day. And he's got absolutely no shortage of confidence. He comes in and just biffs the first ball straight back over the bowler's head. Doesn't matter what the situation is. Obviously, you can't do that against the Aussies in a test match quite the same way. But he handled the Indian pace bowlers very comfortably and created or played some vital innings in that series.
Yeah, speaking to one of the members of the England sort of hierarchy during the Lords Test match, and saying about the Australia A match down at Canterbury, where the Lions played against Australia A, and, you know, they had a top 6, fairly inexperienced. And when Curran came in at 7, the game just went up a level, you know, compared to what are supposedly your reserve top 6 batsmen in the country. But Curran came in 7, made a half century, game went up a level. So, I mean, he's a quality player, and perhaps once we get through the Ashes, it's time to play him most of the time, if not all the time.
Mm. All roads, of course, lead to Ben Stokes. Where does he bat, for one thing? Yeah. I mean, he seems to be able to bat anyway. I think now, partly on the evidence of that last innings, but just generally, I think he's got the best technique in the team now. You know, he that first bit of that 100 at Headingley, 2 runs from what his first 60-odd balls, you know, his defence was so resolute and solid and compact, and it was thou shalt not pass kind of defence, which even Joe Root hasn't really got. He's got all the strokes, as we've seen. He's got the ability to bat long periods. So, to me, he can bat anywhere. He could certainly bat at 3 for England, ultimately. Whether you want to have a person of that all-round ability at number 3, because obviously his bowling is also valuable and it takes a lot of energy to be a bowler, fast bowler. You need time off after that. That's why Ian Botham could never bat in the top order because you expend so much energy bowling and you need to recover and recharge your batteries before you can go out and play a long innings. So it's going to have to be an issue where how much Stokes bowls in the future, but I think he could bat in the top three for England.
The thing is, England have had so many problems with their batting order for so long. Somewhere along the line, they need to find a solution. They need to do something different in the search for a solution. Can't just keep on going on the way they have been doing. My hunch is that actually that these problems will persist until they find very specific solutions for the problems they've got, i.e., who is going to open perhaps one or two positions. You know, are there two really solid openers out there? You know, Roy Burns had a good series, but you wonder whether he is the long-term solution. But there is a calmness about his batting that's to be admired, I think. And he, you know, just because he's got an odd technique, lots of players have had odd techniques and made it work. So you know that is worth persevering with. But someone else to open with him, the number three position, and there are all sorts of other, you know, areas in the side as well to sort out. And I suppose it's about finding how do they find their balance, really. What, you know, who plays? Are they going to make ruthless decisions about certain players? I mean, what about Johnny Bairstow? Do they take the gloves off him and say, right, you're a batsman, and bring Ben Foulkes into the side? You know, so there are lots of problems to be sorted out. At the moment, the Ashes are on. You can understand why they've gone with the same team as Headingley. It would be fascinating, actually, if they'd lost Headingley, what they would have done for Old Trafford, because presumably then there would have been a change and a look to the future, because the series has gone. Once the Ashes are gone, you might as well change things around and have a look at what the future is. But I can understand why they've gone with the same lineup. Bring in a new batsman now, really tough, I would have thought, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. So the thing that really stood out for me, I suppose, with that Stokes innings was his ability to be composed under that extreme pressure and make the right selection of shot or option. And he just seemed completely, in that last hour and a half, 2 hours of the game, he seemed in this sort of bubble, which was completely impermeable. He seemed totally in control. And some sportsmen have this unique ability to execute their skills under pressure. It's a horrible cliche, but and I suppose we're thinking of people like MS Dhoni, who clearly does it, this sort of cold-hearted killer almost, a ruthlessness about them. Novak Djokovic, I think, is a bit like that as well. Just it seems like there's this sort of aura of invincibility about these people. Now, Paddy Upton, who I mentioned earlier, is a sports and business coach who's worked with a lot of cricket teams and other athletes. He started out actually as a sports and fitness coach, but then went into psychology of sport as well, worked with a lot of premier athletes, has worked with the Indian cricket team, has worked with a number of IPL teams. And last spring was working with the Rajasthan Royals, who of course included Ben Stokes, Joss Butler, Jofra Archer and Steve Smith. So he got very close and personal to all those players. He's written a book called The Barefoot Coach, which is reminiscences and experiences of his life in cricket and other sports and how the psychology of players affects their performance. And what I wanted to know from him really was, he equates a lot of these supreme sportsmen, like the MS Dhonis, he says that they have, many of them have traits of psychopaths. So their ability to perform under pressure, their detachment, their clear thinking, their cold-hearted ruthlessness,
lack of emotion.
Yeah, are all sort of traits of psychopaths. So what I wanted to know was, does Stokes have those traits?
Those qualities that Stokes is exhibiting now in terms of his massive confidence and self-belief, his unwavering focus under pressure and not succumbing to pressure, those qualities weren't present 3 months ago in India during a slightly different format in the T20. So where those psychopathic traits that we're talking about are generally ever-present. They don't, you know, that someone can dial them up a little bit and dial the volume down on them a little bit, but they're ever present. That unwavering belief in self doesn't change through real success and real failure. It remains relatively constant. The ability to perform under pressure and have that clear thinking under pressure remains fairly constant. What all that really makes Ben Stokes, it suggests he has less psychopathic traits, so to speak, and he's more normal and human like you and I, that he does feel pressure at some times and sometimes not. He has high confidence at some times and other times not. He's just a, you know, like you and I, he's a human being. And most athletes that I've, other than the odd few out-and-out psychopaths, almost every athlete that I've ever worked with at the top of their game, regardless of the sport, and I've worked with, you know, athletes at the top in more than 11 of their game in more than 11 sports, all of them have insecurities. They all have doubts. They all have negative thoughts. They all question themselves and question their ability. They go through highs and lows when it comes to things like confidence. That is just very normal for any human being to experience. And the guys who succeed consistently at the highest level of the game, it's not because they don't have those things. It's just that they manage those things better and are able to keep focused on the task at hand while those very normal human things are going on in the background. There's only very few athletes out there with genuine big match temperament.
But clearly, he does have it, doesn't he? Because he's done it twice. It wasn't just a one-off. I mean, he did it in the World Cup final. He also did it in the Super Over after the final. And then he's done it again in this this Test match. So there's something about him which seems special, even if it's not there all the time.
Yes. What he delivered in the World Cup final and what he delivered in this last Test match undoubtedly was special. And a special kind of special, this innings in the last Ashes, without a doubt. But one could look at that and then draw conclusions on Ben Stokes' ability to perform under high-pressure situations. But we could also then immediately go to a T20 World Cup final when he bowled the last over defending 21 to a number 7 batsman, or to Chennai Super Kings defending 18 in a 150 game, to bowling to a number 7 batsman who's facing his first ball. And we see that he showed that he capitulated, and it, you know, he had a big target to defend. He had a lot of runs. He wasn't defending 7 or 8 runs that bowlers with big match temperament have. So he performs under high pressure, and he's also capitulated for his team under high pressure. And again, that just makes him normal. But it, I wouldn't put him in the category of an MS Dhoni who prevails almost always under those high pressure situations. Somebody like a VVS Laxman in Test cricket, who almost always prevailed, a Ricky Ponting. Those guys predominantly prevailed under high-pressure situations, where Ben has done unbelievably well, but he's also capitulated relatively spectacularly. But that happens in T20 cricket. Bowlers get hit for 4 sixes and 4 consecutive balls.
Perhaps, and I'm sort of just extrapolating here, really, but perhaps he's better in situations where he's not expected to win. Because if you think about it, in the World Cup final, it got down to 15 off 4 balls, which is almost impossible. And he managed to engineer a tie, although it was a bit lucky in some ways. And then in the Test match, they needed 73 with 1 wicket left. So it was almost, well, this is a lost cause now, I might as well just have a go. And it came off. And in the end, once it got down sort of, you know, 10 to win or something, then he was able to play a more normal kind of cricket. But maybe he's almost liberated by the impossibility of a situation.
Yes, and that is something that is certainly a phenomenon when, you know, an athlete is well behind and they're expected to lose, and then it's just to literally throw the dice and throw everything in. I mean, we had a player, you know, it was a fair while ago now, but in South Africa, Lance Klusener was a classic example. When the team, when winning was in sight and he needed to just play a good innings at 6-7 runs and over to see the team over the line, he often wouldn't succeed. But when it was impossible and you needed 25 off the last over, he really prevailed in those impossible situations. And it, I think it's largely because the pressure wasn't really on. You know, that 4-3-8 game where South Africa chased down 4-3-8 against Australia, you know, quite a while ago. You know, Herschel Gibbs scored 170-odd, but when he went out to bat chasing 4-3-8, it's impossible. So it just frees you up, actually, just to, you know, there isn't really any pressure, but it allows you, the game dictates that you can actually just open your shoulders and throw everything at it without too much concern of the consequence of losing because everyone expects it. So, yes, it actually is. It's a quite a favourable performance situation for a lot of people to be well behind.
Well, I know you tried some, you know, techniques during the IPL to try and help players cope with pressure situations. Did you find anything? Did you find Stokes receptive to any of that, and anything working with him?
You know, Stokes, he's got his own way and his own approach. You know, as have most players. And what I was looking to do was to bring a certain amount of calmness in high pressure situations to players. And Stokes is one of those players who's really wired with high energy, high intensity. So they're sitting, being calm, being still, quieting the mind to a degree seem to work against what is preferable for him, is actually getting himself really up and oversights for the situation. So, you know, the stuff that I was bringing to the team around, specifically around some breathing and breath hold techniques to quieten the mind, Stokesy felt that he's actually was needing to ramp up the volume rather than ramp it down. So it was just a case of he didn't really resonate with it, because it didn't resonate with his natural way of performing, which is the case with most of, you know, mental or psychological tools, that they work for some people and not for others. And what's important is that individuals find that which works for them. And he was quite clear that this didn't seem to be for him, which just indicated a really good awareness of what he required to get himself into the best mental space.
Well, that's Paddy Upton, who was the head coach of the Rajasthan Royals in the last IPL. And Ben Stokes didn't do very well. There was one game where Mitchell Santner hit him for six off the last ball, where it was reminiscent of the last World T20 final, when Stokes disappeared around the park in the last over. It's fascinating, isn't it? So it's this idea that when you're the underdog, that's when it seems if someone like Ben Stokes flourishes. When the expectations are high, perhaps, but Paddy Upton saying there, you know, it's not so easy to be MS Dhoni like, not so easy to be so ruthless.
Well, if you're human, I mean, I think his point in a way was that Stokes is so human, whereas the MS Dhonis seem almost inhuman, like Terminators almost, and that Stokes is affected by some external circumstances.
And that's interesting, because I thought just towards the end, when we're too needed, he started to take massive risks that he didn't need to take, almost as if, you know, the pressure was building. He talked afterwards, didn't he? He said the last 20 runs, I started to get really nervous. And you could almost see it, that thing, isn't it, about the closer you get, almost the harder it becomes. So I remember I asked Alistair Cook about that shot that he played. You know, why did he take it on, that sweep off the final ball of the over? Well, you can see sort of why he took on, because it was the final ball of the over. But it was a very risky shot, I thought. I've watched it back many times, mainly to see whether it was out or not, just to look at look at the DRS tracking and Lyon's angle. And from where I was watching, I couldn't see the leg side field. So I'm not sure what was on the leg side, but to me it looked as if the shot to play was shot over long on or wide long on, rather than the sweep shot to that delivery, because it was quite a full ball. So the bunt over wide long on or over mid on would have been the shot. I presume there wasn't, you know, the leg side field wasn't totally populated, because I couldn't actually see from where I was watching.
There may have been a long on.
In which case, perhaps more the slog sweep rather than the square sweep. Mm. Anyway, the point I'm making is that, you know, when push comes to shove, someone like Ben Stokes, who played fantastically in an icicle manner, he does feel the pressure. You felt the pressure that moment. Of course, there was nearly the run out as well from the ball that went away on the offside from the reverse sweep. So, to answer the question, Ben Stokes is not a psychopath,
which is quite a relief, really. So, of course, Nathan Lyon's not going to get any ribbing when he catches the ball cleanly in the Old Trafford test, is he, at the bowler's end? That's going to be a tough game for him, I reckon. He's going to get plenty of abuse from the polite Lancastrian fans.
He's a fabulous bowler. He's had a wonderful career. I mean, he was taken to task a bit over some of the things he said in the past.
That's the thing, isn't it?
You say something and it comes back to haunt you a bit. I'm going to end careers and Matt Prior.
Sort of what goes around comes around.
Comes around, yeah. So I saw Nathan Lyon actually the day after, and he was just it would have been a very poignant photograph. He was sitting in the square outside the team's hotel, a little square outside the team's hotel in Leeds, just on his own, just on his phone. I mean, everyone's on their own on their phone for a while, but it would just make such a poignant photograph.
I thought
leave him to his misery. He's had enough misery over the last couple of days without someone putting an iPhone up and taking a photograph of him.
Well, talking of players and Old Trafford, Jimmy Anderson, of course, now missing out on the series, and would have been a wonderful moment for him to be playing in this fourth test, but he's failed to convince the selectors that he can get through it on his home ground. Bowling would be the first time he's bowled in the Ashes with a stand named after him at one end. Probably one of the first times that's ever happened, actually. So shame for him. What does
massive shame actually?
Yeah, massive shame.
Yeah, huge.
I mean what's the future hold for him though? For me, I think his body's telling him something. Age 37, it's had enough. And I know it's only a small injury, but other things will start to go. And I sort of feel your pace just gradually drops. Of course, he's a master precision operator. You know, beautiful control of movement. But do we really want to see Jimmy Anderson, the dobber, bowling 76 miles an hour with the keeper stood up? I don't.
Well, I don't think we do. I don't think he wants that either. But
passage, you can't stop time.
No, you can't.
You can't.
But he is as fit a bowler at that age as I think I've ever seen. And he says, and has said, that he wants to continue until he's 40. He was still, after the last Ashes series, he was talking about going back to Australia and trying to win back the Ashes again. And I think most people thought, well, OK, fair enough. We'll see how that works out. That seems extremely unlikely. But that is what he says he wants to do. It may well be that, you say something and then gradually you start to think, actually, is that really what I want? But we'll see.
We'll see on that.
I don't think... I know you think that that should probably be it. I mean, he might make the decision for himself. I don't think that should necessarily be it from Jimmy Anderson.
No, I'll tell you what it is, though. It's not that I'm not trying to be heartless about this, because I love Jimmy Anderson. I've in a way, he has given me, as a journalist, broadcaster, so much material to write about, because the way he manoeuvres batsmen and manipulates the ball is brilliant. In the same way, actually, as Shane Warne was a godsend to journalists and broadcasters in the previous sort of decade, Jimmy Anderson has been that player this time. I find it, the way bowlers operate and, sort of try and unsettle and unhinge batsmen, amazingly compelling. And he's been the best person at doing that for the last 10, 15 years. But I know from experience that your bowling just used to get out for fun, suddenly pulling balls off a length that you used to hurry him with, or he's sort of shimmying up the wicket and hitting you back over your head. And you don't feel that change in your body and your bowling action and your speed, but you see the evidence of it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. And I think probably if Jimmy Anderson finds that happening, then he'll work it out for himself and say, yeah, OK, I can see the evidence. But let's wait until he gets that evidence first.
OK, well, certainly Jimmy's earned the right to take his time and make his own decision about that situation, and maybe he'll still produce more magic deliveries for both Lancashire and England. We're going to end now because, for some odd reason, I'm still trying to seek to bowl magic deliveries, even at the age of 59. I'm off to play a match, occasional match for Millfield Cricket Club, a wandering cricket club, which is really good fun, and they let me have an occasional bowl at about, 53 miles an hour. And I try and find ways of conjuring up wickets. It doesn't usually work, but I can't stop trying to see if I can still get a wicket here or there. Talking of the fruitless task of bowling, I just wanted to make reference to that incredible run chase the other night at Taunton, where Middlesex chased 226 to win in that Vitality Blast match to qualify for the quarterfinals for the first time for about a decade. But the run making, the hitting, was absolutely astonishing in that game. We had 450 runs in about 2.25 hours on, incidentally, a plastic pitch, a hybrid pitch, which just provided the most beautiful bounce for batsmen to hit through the line and smash the bowlers into existence. It certainly wasn't a bowler's night. I'm glad, from that point of view, that I retired a long time ago, because T20 is pretty much a bowler's nightmare. Well, we're both really looking forward to this week. Of course, the quarterfinals of the Vitality Blast start on the same day as the fourth test, which starts on Wednesday at Old Trafford. We'll be reporting back from each day of that game. And by the way, if you could review this podcast, it would really help us, because we love to know what you think and the sort of subjects that we could cover. So please review this podcast on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you during the week.
Podcast Network.